Okay, folks, good evening again, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Tonight's real guest, provided by God, is Neil Donald Walsh. Neil probably needs no introduction as the author of the Conversation with God series, which has been translated into 34 languages, touching millions of lives and inspiring important changes in their day-to-day lives. Neil has published 16 other works, as well as a number of video and audio programs. The With God series has redefined God and shifted spiritual paradigms around the globe. As a result, Neil created the Conversations with God Foundation, a nonprofit educational organization dedicated to inspiring the world to help itself move from violence to peace, from confusion to clarity, and from anger to love. So let's welcome Neil to the show now. Hi, Neil. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm just great. Thank you, and thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm really thrilled to have you tonight. You know, I watched the movie version of your life, and I was amazed at some of the difficulties you were able to overcome. I'm just going to kind of take us back briefly for those people who might not be familiar. I don't want to, you know, you to have to go over your entire story again, but what kept you going before you got to the other side of knowing that you had something amazing to share?
Well, you know, I think it was, I hate to be almost predictable about this, but it was my parents' training, really, my father in particular. He just never accepted that something couldn't be done. He never accepted failure, not in a mean way, just in a very optimistic way.
Uh-huh.
He always felt that there was another chance around the next corner and so forth. And so his philosophy of life was never give up. You can pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You can do anything you want if you try. And I think those were the messages when I was in my deepest, darkest hour before I really had my conversation with God that I was relying on that got me through those first weeks and months. And then, of course, as the movie showed, I wound up having a very spiritual experience, which took me the rest of the way home for sure.
Definitely. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Whatever you want to talk about tonight is where we'll go. We're going to move into some of the things you're doing today and your travels and stuff, but do you want to share anything about that, some of the more interesting aspects of the spiritual process that you went through?
Well, you know, I've written many books that discuss this, but
right.
in brief, I
right.
can simply say that I had reached the end of my rope at that time in my life. I mean, nothing in my life was working. My relationship with my significant other was falling apart. My health was going rapidly downhill. I couldn't seem to get my career, going and off the ground. And so, and I was 50 years old. I was not a young man at the time. So I realized, my gosh, you know, after a half century on the planet, this is all I've accomplished, and I'm now here on the street. I was a street person at that time, as people who saw the movie know. I broke my neck in a car accident. The insurance company took a year and a half to come to a settlement, by which time I didn't need the money. I needed it at the time, not a year and a half later. But it's, you know, the job of insurance companies to delay as long as they can or not pay at all if they can.
Right, that's right.
So I wound up, you know, living on the street. I was destitute. I couldn't work. I had a broken neck. And I'm lucky, actually, to have escaped with my life. Or without severe paralysis, I was one of those very fortunate people who sustained a broken neck, but in just the right place where it didn't create any paralysis or long-term side effects.
Mm-hmm.
However, for about 2.5 years, I couldn't lift anything more than 2.5 pounds. I was restricted severely in my movement, and I couldn't work. I couldn't hold a regular job. Soon, I fell through the cracks of the social welfare system, and before I knew it, I was, in fact, living on the street.
Mm-hmm.
I had become a street person, and I was out there on the sidewalk living outside for the better part of a year, all but 2 weeks, I mean, shy of 1 year. And so it was a very difficult time in my life, and I was forced to consider what it takes to survive at a very minimal level.
Mm-hmm.
And from that experience, I regained a whole new viewpoint about life. But I did not have my conversation with God experience at that time, though. It's interesting, as I said, it was my background, my training, my upbringing that pulled me through that. I finally did find a little part-time job at a radio station, and I got back into the workforce. Now, here is where the screw turns. Here is where it got interesting, because I got myself I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps, got myself back into the workforce. It was a little weekend job, but at least I was producing income again. I had a small little apartment that I could afford, and I was back on my way, you see, and that's when I realized the utter vacuousness of life, because I moved from that part-time job. I was offered a full-time job about 6 months later. Then I was offered actually to be the manager of the radio station where I was working about a year and a half after that. I became the program director, and then I realized, my gosh, is this really all there is? Is life really this empty? Is life really this vacuous? Is life really this meaningless? Is that all there is?
Because right,
that's
right.
All there is, like the old Peggy Lee song.
Yeah, one of my
favorites. Clowns. So from that experience of utter mental desolation, which was even worse than being on the street, I woke up one night, and this is when my spiritual experience began. I woke up one night in the middle of the night. I began pacing the small house I was living in back and forth. It's 4:20 in the morning, and I was thinking to myself, gosh, what does it take to make life work? What have I done to deserve a life of such continuing struggle? And somebody tell me the rules. You know, I'll play. Just give me the rule book. I found a yellow legal pad on the coffee table in front of me. Don't know what it was doing there, but I picked it up, and I began writing a very angry letter to God, asking all those questions. And it was then that I had that spiritual experience that I told you about. I actually felt a presence in the room, and I heard a voice, and it was a voice that was a physical voice in the room, not a voice in my head. I thought someone was in the room with me. And I turned around, and of course there was no one there, but the voice was just as loud and clear as anybody's. And it said to me, quite simply, Neil, do you really want answers to all of these questions, or are you just venting? And I remember thinking to myself, well, I am venting, but if you got answers, I'd sure as heck like to know what they are. And with that, I was given all the answers to all the questions I had asked. In fact, I was given the answers not only to questions I had asked, but frankly, to questions I didn't even know existed. I mean, it was like a download. Suddenly I felt that my mind was filled with a million thoughts, and my job was to ask the right questions to pull those thoughts out. And I did. I began asking questions about everything. One thing led to another. I began writing down everything that I was, how do I put this, hearing in my mind. And with that, I had many, many pages, 40 or perhaps 50 pages of handwritten back and forth questions and answers, dialogue, if you please.
Right, right.
When the morning came, 8:20 in the morning, it was a Saturday morning, as I recall. I did not have to work that day, so I went back to bed because I had been up since 4:20. But every morning thereafter, for about 3 weeks, at 4:15 in the morning, I would awaken automatically, almost as if somebody had an alarm clock in my mind, go out into the other room and sit down and quietly continue this on paper dialogue until I wound up with several 100 pages of handwritten questions and answers. This was not being done on a keyboard. This was just a handwritten on a yellow legal pads. And this went on for quite a while, and then finally at one point I thought, you know, I should really at least transcribe these. I never, ever, ever thought of having a book published. But I did think it would be good just to have them for my own, you know, for my own journal.
Right, right.
So I asked a friend of mine who I knew if she would mind doing some keyboarding for me. I could give her just a few dollars. I didn't have a lot of money, but I'd pay her a little bit if she wouldn't mind doing it, and she said she would. And she began keyboarding into her computer, what I had written by hand on the yellow legal pads. And then she came to me, and she said, Neil, what is this? What is this? And I said, well, you know, it's just a dialogue I'm having with my inner self, whatever you want to call it. It was to me almost like a conversation with God. And she was in tears, and she said, I've never read anything like this in my life. This is changing my whole life.
Wow.
That's when I realized I had something here, and the rest, as they say, is publishing history.
All right, right.
I wound up sending it to a publisher, really not even then, not so much thinking I should make a book out of this. The reason I sent it to a publisher, quite frankly, is that it said in the dialogue, this will one day become a book. And it was the only thing that was measurable. Everything else in that dialogue was, you know, conceptual in nature, theoretical, if you please. Could be right, could be wrong, who knows.
Yeah.
But here was something that was actually factual. This will one day become a book. I could measure that outcome. So I sent it to a publisher, frankly, to dare the universe to see, well, if this is true, we'll see what happens. Well, in fact, it did wind up being published. It wound up being on the New York Times bestseller list for 2.5 years, 137 weeks straight.
Wow.
It wound up getting translated into 37 languages.
Wow.
Eight books followed, six of which made the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
So, and I'm not bragging about that. I truly am not. I'm just noticing that when God gives you a piece of information, you probably should listen.
You should listen, exactly.
That's the long and the short of it. That's the story, and it goes on to this very day, and I'm happy to say that it has come to the attention of now many people around the world. They estimate that probably over 7.5 million people have read these books.
Oh, yeah.
As I said, in 37 languages all over the world, and I'm very, very grateful and very humbled by that, and I'm very pleased that if anything that has happened here has benefited even one other person, that has made reading this whole adventure worthwhile.
There's one book that you have published that I have not read, and a friend of mine told me to ask you about that, and that's the one that's called Home with God. She said that it talks about what happens when we cross over, when we return home. Can you tell us about that book?
Yes, it's the last book.
Okay.
In the Conversations with God series, so you may not have caught up with it yet. It's the final book in the series. It's a 9-book series, and that is the end of the dialogue. And appropriately, it ends with the ending of our physical life, and it talks, in fact, about our transition, if you please, what the book calls your continuation day.
Right.
And it discusses what happens at the moment of our death. It discusses the eternal journey of the soul, the reason that journey is undertaken, what happens along that path, both in the physical and in the non-physical parts of it. And it just discusses the whole cosmology of life in those terms. It's a very exciting book to read. It's, I think, spiritually revolutionary and revelatory, both.
Mm.
And it has brought great, great comfort to both the people who are in the final stages of their life, as well as family members of those who are. The book has become extremely popular with hospices and caregivers of those who are terminally ill, as well as others who are not terminally ill, but simply have a great desire to learn more about the possibilities of what might occur at the moment that we leave our physical bodies. So it's a wonderful book. The book is called Home with God in a Life That Never Ends.
Well, that's one I definitely want to catch up on. You know, I've had a few guests on, you know, like Danion Brinkley and Dr. Moody and such that have had some pretty startling, well, Moody hasn't, but Danion had some pretty startling near-death experiences. And it seems that, you know, that as a society, we're really in a lot of denial about a lot of things, including death, spirit, and so on. It's almost like we throw bones over our shoulders, and then, you know, right at the end, you know, we're kind of like, well, now what? And books like the ones that you offered open up so many doors for us to awaken to the idea that we're eternal spirits, that we don't die, and we're having a human experience.
Yes, and the central question, of course, then, is what is this experience about? If we, in fact, are on a lifelong, or if you please, an eternal journey of the soul, if that's truly what's happening, and I believe that it is, then we have to necessarily ask, well, then what does this particular limited life from birth to death in this physical form, what does it mean? What's it for? What's its purpose? How does that fit into the overall eternal scheme of things? And are we living our lives in a way that causes us to make some sense of that, or are we simply ignoring the largest part of that, and then, as you say, at the moment of our death, now what? Because we realize that, in fact, we've wasted this particular incarnation by and large, because we have not really paid attention to the genuine purpose of the soul. So I think any thinking person who has any idea at all about these things would have to stop and ask themselves, what am I doing here? Who am I? What is my real identity? What is the purpose of my journey here? And how can I fulfill that purpose in the days and times of my life?
Absolutely.
And, of course, along with that, we have to struggle with how much of my so-called, quote-unquote, regular life, you know, going bowling on Friday nights and watching television on Saturday evening, whatever, going out to the movies, raising children, having families and so forth, the so-called regular lives that we live, going to work, seeking to make a success of our of our physical life. How much of that, if any, do I have to give up? How much of that do I have to alter and change?
Mm.
It's nothing more than Arjuna's, eternal question to Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Is it appropriate for me to battle on the inside of myself what is called in the Islamic tradition jihad, the internal battle, not an external battle, the internal battle between the spiritual journey, the spiritual self, between the spiritual agenda, if you please, and the agenda of the body, which is in many cases quite different from our spiritual agenda. So there's always this tension between what we're doing in the physical, on the physical plane, get the guy, get the girl, get the car, get the job, get the house, get the kids, get the grandkids, get the promotion, get the office in the corner, get the retirement watch, get the gray hair, and get the heck out.
To what do you attribute our, I see it as a descent or a preoccupation with materialism. It seems that people have pretty much turned towards superficiality to entertain them and so on and so forth. And
well, they have because they have no other explanation that makes sense.
Yeah.
For the life they're living, that is correct. So rather than have nothing at all, rather than have no reason at all, they turn to physical things, and just as you say, because it's better than nothing. Otherwise, we have no reason at all to live our
lives. That's right. Just wandering around, babbling to themselves.
Yeah, just right. Imagining themselves to be nothing more than biological incidents or biological accidents, if you please, having no rhyme or reason, no purpose larger than getting through the moment, getting through the day, not much different from an ant or any other kind of insect or biological being. I mean, the mind begs to know, wait a minute, there must be something more going on here. Give me something, give me anything, even if it's baubles, bangles, and beads.
It may be just the fact that I was born in 1950, but it seems that there was a lot more that at that time, and I'm sure everybody thinks this and says this, that there was more love and a more connection to the earth and just a natural knowingness that occurred with our, well, for instance, with my grandparents who came out in a covered wagon than there is today. What do you think is happening to the love in the world?
Well, I think what's going on is a speeding up
mm-hmm.
of the experience of being human. You know, in your grandfather's days, he could spend 12 weeks getting across the country, or 14 or 15 weeks getting from the East Coast to Missouri. And he could take his time with everything, and there was time for us to get our hands in the dirt and turn over some crops and live that kind of a life. And we did have a lot more opportunity to honor life and to really experience life in its most basic forms in those ways. These days, life is moving so quickly. There's been just a speeding up of the whole life experience. You know, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. In my grandfather's time, he could probably live his entire life without having a single fundamental idea that he held about how life is seriously challenged.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He could go through 60, 80, 90 years and not have any of the fundamental basic understandings about life seriously challenged. In my father's day, he might get through perhaps 50, maybe 45 years, and then before those 45 years were up, something would come along that would seriously challenge his paradigm, his understanding of life and how it worked. In my lifetime, I can't get through 20 years. I haven't been able to get through 20 years without somebody coming along saying, no, it's about DNA, it's about this, it's about that, it's about cloning, it's about, and all of a sudden everything that I thought was true 20 years ago is not true today.
Yeah.
In my children's life, they're lucky if they can get through 5 years without something fundamentally shifting all the ground rules of the game. And in the lives of my grandchildren, my children's children, they will live in the space of what I call instantaneosity. That is, no sooner will something become apparent to us than something else to challenge it will come along.
Wow.
And that is because of the increase in our ability to communicate with each other. In my grandfather's time, of course, somebody on the other side of the world could discover something or learn something, and my grandfather wouldn't know about it for 25, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, that's right.
In these days, if something happens in Beijing, we know about it within 13 seconds.
Yep.
So the speed with which we share data has to do with the kind of life that we're living. And by the way, that's both a cause for dismay at some levels, but it's also a cause for great optimism as well, because as we begin to share the extraordinary ideas about our true nature, who we really are, why we're really here, what life is truly all about, as we begin to share that kind of data back and forth with instantaneity, we stand the chance of creating critical mass among the peoples of the Earth, and in fact truly creating the kind of evolutionary quantum leap that we've been hearing about that would happen for a long time.
Yeah, the a lot of people are talking about the 100th monkey theory, and also that we're in a particularly energetic time leading up to the time. Well, 2012 is one of the target dates that seems to be pretty popular. On the other hand, it seems that we're also headed for disaster on many levels globally. With global warming and the use of the resources and running out of food and water and things. I'm just wondering how we're going to manage to wake up fast enough to turn this thing around if we can do it.
Well, we will with the help of people like you, people who are what I call COIs, centers of influence like you, who produce radio programs that reach many hundreds and thousands of people with information like we're talking about right now. As long as we have broadcasters who are using the Internet in new and exciting ways, as long as we have writers and authors who are using the publishing business in new and exciting ways, as long as we have teachers and messengers who are using all of the means of communication now available to us in new and exciting ways, we stand a chance, and I think we do, and I think that Al Gore is proving that. His extraordinary efforts with his book and film, An Inconvenient Truth, has caused us to be more aware in 12 months than we would have been in the last 12 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Had he not put that movie out. So you see, I do think that we do stand an opportunity, stand a chance, to beat this game after all, but we are going to have to move fast. I agree with you there.
Yeah.
Time is a waste, and we have no time to lose. There's no question about that. It's going to be a really interesting experience to see who wins this human race.
Yes, it is. If we're going to rise to the occasion, or, I tend to be optimistic, but it's there are days when I wonder. You've traveled a lot. I in my notes, I see you've gone to some of the more interesting places around the world, Machu Picchu in Peru, and the Shinto shrines of Japan, and Moscow, Vatican City. Would you like to share some of your experiences in those other countries to broaden our horizon about people in other lands?
Well, I can tell you this much. I've been to Tiananmen Square in Beijing, and just really in Seoul and Korea, all over. Really, all over. I'm very blessed. I'm very grateful. I feel very deeply appreciative that the work that I'm doing has taken me to these wonderful and extraordinary places. But what I've learned is that people everywhere are essentially the same. They want essentially the same things.
Yeah.
And that there's a great hunger, whether you're talking to people in Peru or talking to people in West Germany or talking to people in Moscow, or New Jersey for that matter, there is the same identical hunger. People now really are hungry for two things. One, a larger understanding, as I've been talking about now for the past several minutes, a larger understanding of life itself, what is really going on here. What is the purpose of it, and what role can we play more fundamentally in the experience of that? And number two, there surely must be a better way for us to create our collective experience than the way in which we are now doing it. Surely there's a way to achieve peace and harmony at last in the experience of the body human, of the collective known as humanity. There's got to be a way, and we can send a man to the moon, and we can send rockets out into outer space and land them on far distant planets. Surely we ought to be able to find a way to live in peace and harmony in this world. And I think that those are the things that people hunger for in every culture and every place I've been, which is why the messages of Conversations with God are so widely and enthusiastically received.
Absolutely. So do you have any personal take on the situation as far as the violence that's going on, let's just say it, in Iraq and some of the other countries right now? It seems like these are parts of an old system that just has never worked and never will work.
I agree with you, and what we have to do is change our cultural story.
Yes.
That is the point of my latest book, Happier Than God, which has just been published about 6 weeks ago.
Oh, wonderful.
And if people want to know more about that book, by the way, and how they can join in the movement that's building up around that document. They can do that by going to my website, which is ndwhome.com. So it's kind of a shorthand website to get people to my home page. NDW, of course, stands for Neil Donald Walsh. So they just type in ndwhome, H-O-M-E.com, and that'll drive them right to my home page, and they can learn more about that wonderful new book, Happier Than God, and find answers to the question you've just asked.
Wonderful.
Which is, of course, you know, what is the antidote to all this conflict, to all this violence, to this killing, to this anger that we see around the world, and to the ways in which we interact with each other that cause us to create such dismal situations and circumstances, such as the ones that you cite, not only in Iraq, but in other places around the world as well.
Oh, yeah.
There must be a way, and the way to do it, as the book clearly points out, and we can do this both in our personal life as well as in our collective experience, is to change our cultural story around the central principle of life that is at the core of humanity's present experience. And that's the principle of separation.
That is,
most human beings have created a cultural story or live within a cultural story told to them by others, which is a story of separation. It starts with our idea that we are separate from God, separate, therefore, from all of life. We are living life, but we are separate from it. We have what I call a separation theology. A separation theology says that I'm over here and God's over there and never the twain shall meet, with the possible exception of at the moment of our death if we've been good little boys and girls.
Or an intermediary which you have to pay.
Yes, or through some other circumstance that is clearly understood or known by us.
Right, right.
So it's all very mysterious and all very, and it's based in the thought of separation. That separation theology produces a separation cosmology, that is a way of looking at life cosmologically that says that everything is separate from everything else. We are all part of a single system, but the disparate elements of that system are separate from each other. That separation cosmology produces a separation sociology, that is a way of socializing with each other on this planet that says, I'm over here and you're over there. My interests are not your interests. Your interests are not mine. We are separate from each other. And that separation sociology produces, alas, a separation pathology. That is, pathological behaviors of self-destruction, which we are seeing on CNN and in the daily newspapers every day of our lives. So what it will turn that around is a shift in the first instance, a change in our original cultural story of separation from God, an idea, a new cultural story that says, what if it were true, just what if it were true, that God and we are not separated at all, but that in fact human beings are the individuated manifestation of divinity. Could we dare go so far as to imagine that life is the physicalization of God, of divinity itself? And if that's true, then you and I are not separated from God, and we are therefore not separated from each other. We are, in fact, at the highest level, one. We are unified, part of a unified, singular system. And suddenly, what I do for you, I do for me. What I don't do for you, I don't do for me. The damage and the injury that I inflict upon you is ultimately inflicted upon myself. Human history has shown this. It just takes a longer time for it to cycle around, and so we don't seem to see it. But it is, in fact, true, fundamentally true. And if we understand that and begin to embrace the notion of our unity rather than of our separation,
absolutely,
everything on the planet would change within 24 hours.
Oh, absolutely. The whole idea of enemies. if we're all part of the divinity, if we are all one, then what, you know, we're fighting with ourselves, you know.
What we are doing here is living a massive case of mistaken identity. And you're perfectly correct. You know, it's like saying that your right hand is the enemy of your left.
Right. And it just seems so ridiculous that some aspect of God would judge some other aspect of itself. You know, it's just incomprehensible. So I do see that there's a lot of judgment, and like you said, it gets down to the separation mentality. You got it down.
In one of the books, I forgot which one now, that I've written, we talk about bringing an end to better, which is one of the most divisive and one of the most seductive concepts ever to be visited upon the human mind.
Yep.
The idea that one person, one idea, one cosmology, one religion, one political party, one point of view is somehow superior or better than another.
Yep.
Yet a thing cannot be superior to itself. So if we are, in fact, all one, then we simply have variations in the ways in which we express our singularity.
Yes.
But one way is not any better than another way. Now, you start telling people of various religions that, and immediately you're in for an argument. You're in for a parlor discussion, which is why, of course, when I was a child, I was instructed, politics and religion are not discussed at our coffee table. Because everyone understood perfectly well that people could not hold a point of view around those issues that could bring them together, ultimately.
Right.
So we have a challenge there, and if we dare to say, you know, there is no one path that's better than any other path back home to God.
Right.
You're saying something that is, even in this day and age, spiritually revolutionary.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me, and it seems like the only reasonable way to see things, really.
Can't imagine that it's necessary for us to insist that if we belong to one religion, where we have a chance of going back to God if we obey all the rules, but if we belong to another religion, even if we do obey all the rules, we can't get back to God in any case whatsoever because we simply chose the wrong religion.
Yes.
I just can't believe in a God who would be that judgmental and who would care that much whether you were a Jew or a Baptist, whether you were a Muslim or a Catholic. I don't get that God's up there with brand names. Says, no, you got to come in here under certain aegis, under a certain symbol, under a certain religion, or I can't let you in. Even if you were the nicest person on the earth, can't let you in because you happen to be of the wrong faith tradition. I just can't imagine a God who would care about something like that.
I can't either.
And yet 2/3 of the world's people do believe in that kind of a God, and will fight to the death for it, and will kill you, in fact, under the right circumstances, because you hold a different point of view than they do about God. So there's been so much killing in the name of God that it's almost unbelievable. I can recall seeing a bumper sticker in Florida a couple of years ago that really caught my eye. It said, "God, save me from your people."
That's a good one. I like that. I wonder what it's going to take for people to bridge that divide.
Well, a new point of view about things. What it's going to take is enough people who see that it simply can't be like that.
To
begin to share a new cultural story, and it has to start with our young people.
Yeah.
That's why I have started the School of the New Spirituality as a means of getting this message out to people when they're very young, so they don't grow up into the same cultural story in which the sins of the father are visited upon the sons even unto the seventh generation.
Yeah. Boy, isn't that the truth? Wow.
Hatred and intolerance are taught.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's clear about that, too. And, you know, another thing is that we seem to believe that God micromanages our lives. But in your writings, isn't it pointed out that we're really responsible for ourselves?
Well, of course we are.
Yeah.
Even religion teaches us that. Most of the world's religions tell us that we exercise free will every moment of our lives.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, God isn't standing on the sidelines going, you know, don't do this and do that. I mean, God gives us free will. Even traditional religion teaches us that. So clearly and obviously we are responsible for the choices that we make, and we have the opportunity to assess our choices and our options and make the choice that most clearly represents our thought about who we are. Every act is an act of self-definition.
Yeah.
Conversations with God says that. We are constantly in the act of recreating ourselves anew in the next grandest version of the greatest vision ever we held about who we are. That's what's going on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And once we understand that, once we understand we are on an eternal journey of the soul, that we are a spirit with a body, we are not a body, but we have a body. But the body is something you have, not something you are.
Right, right.
As soon as we understand that, we begin to shift and change our whole paradigm, our whole awareness, our whole understanding of what we're doing here on the earth. And that, of course, produces changes in our behaviors as well.
Yes, yes, very good. There's a question that I'm kind of... kind of going to like mull around, because I know a lot of people think about this subject, and it seems that a lot of people seem to believe that about every 2,000 years or so, there's some kind of special messenger that's sent to straighten us all out or tell us how it is. And, of course, we know that in the traditional Christian religion, that's, they consider that the second coming and believe that, you know, that there's they're going to be saved. What's your take on the on that whole idea that there's, is it possible that we are the body that is going to be here, you know, that we are the ones?
Well, you know, the Baha'i faith, which I find to be a fascinating spiritual tradition, the Baha'i faith indicates that every generation produces a messenger, a messiah, if you please, a person who steps forward and shares a wonderful truth and brings the next level of clarity to the human culture, to the human species, about all of it. And I go one step further than the Baha'i faith. I think not just every generation. I think that every culture, every group of people, every clan, every place where people are grouped, produces not just one person, but many people. As a matter of fact, taken to its extreme, I think that all people are messengers of God and simply don't know it. But there are some who do know it, some who do understand it, some who do see it, and some who are not put off by it or afraid of it or scared to step into that. And they step forward, in fact, and assume the role of one who would share with others in some immutable truths about life and how it really is. So I think the answer is that the second coming is not only the second coming, but the continual coming of the Christed One, the messenger from God, who lives and breathes inside of each and every one of us, simply waiting to emerge through us as part of our behaviors, as part of our thoughts, as part of the words that we share with the world, and as part of the way that we live our lives. And I do think that this particular generation, because of the instantaneity of our communication, stands the greatest chance of any generation so far of duplicating that effect and creating miniature copies of, if you please, the messenger in every place, in every culture, in every city, town, and village on the earth. And I think that's happening. I think we're seeing it emerge. I think that that's why so many people are stepping forward into that profile. And if you look even at simple things in our own culture here in the United States, how many books and magazines have you seen with the word God on the cover in the past 5 years? They're just all over the place. God's this and God's that and conversations with God and discovering God and learning about God and, and so on and so forth. I mean, everybody's got a book about it, and it's great, and I've never seen the word God on so many book covers in my life.
That's true. That's true. Well, it's a good thing.
It is a good thing, and it's a manifestation of what I'm saying to you. That suddenly people are just simply showing up, and they're coming out of the woodwork, if you please.
And
stepping into their own messengership, if I could call it that.
Well, of course, you've definitely led the way on that score with, you know, all of the work that you've done. I mean, it's an amazing body of work that has just completely is in the process of transforming the planet. Thank goodness. Do you believe in the power of prayer? Do you think that prayer affects our world? I see a lot of people.
Oh my gosh, of course. Okay. Oh my gosh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh my gosh, yes. Any thought that's sent out with deliberate intention behind it is a prayer. And because it's about energy. We're simply discussing here energy. Prayer is a thought. Thought is energy. And prayer that's directed with specific intent in a specific direction for a particular outcome obviously produces outcomes. I mean, people have been talking about that for, and the anecdotal evidence around that is so voluminous. One would be hard pressed not to notice that and not to acknowledge it. Of course, prayer is extremely effective.
If there was anything that you could change about this, our planet today, or bring to our attention, what would that be?
I've discussed it already. Separation. I would change our idea that we are somehow separate from each other.
And I
would invite people to explore the possibilities of what could occur if we decided that we were not separate in any way, but in fact that we were unified and together, and how that would look in terms of our governance, how it would look in terms of our education, how it would look in terms of our economics, how it would look in terms of the way we live our lives socially. In every single way, what would it change, what would be different in our life? And that's what I would change right now, is I would change the way we hold the human experience and the way we experience the human family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. During your, you've given quite a few talks and a lot of small private talks, and what are, I know you've had some inspirational experiences. I remember one in the film about one woman who kind of tore into you about her son.
Yes.
That was quite an amazing moment, and you said something to her about him that just, I think I had tears in my eyes when I heard you. Do you want to share some of those moments that you've had that were so amazing?
Well, you know, there are almost too many to talk about. I mean,
you'll have to make another book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that that people might enjoy just seeing the movie, but rather than me stand here and talk on the telephone.
Yeah, that's true.
Things like that. But I can tell you that all of us are having those kinds of experiences.
Yeah.
Every single one of us. That's what's amazing about it.
Yeah.
Each one of us is being given an opportunity every day of our lives, through the people that we meet, the experiences that we have, the adventures upon which we are sent by life itself, we are being invited to those exact kinds of experiences, all of us, not just me.
Yeah.
And the difference, I think, between myself and many other people is now I start to see them coming. I start to notice what's happening.
Uh-huh.
I don't deny what's going on. I give full credence to what's appearing in my life, and I see the reason for it.
Yeah,
I see that I have actually, of my own accord, called forth particular circumstances and situations, allowing me to notice and to experience, to express and to become, to fulfill the grandest notion I ever had about what it means to be human.
There's another thing too that it seems that you talk about this in your books. How can we expand our concept of God and you know, start to think about it in a larger perspective and not with all the limitations and projections that we have?
By sharing our own personal experience of what God is with everyone whose life we touch.
Mm.
That's been my own answer to that question.
Mm.
We tend to step into the story that we write, and we tend to write the story in one of two ways. From the data that other people have given us, that is, other religions, other belief systems, other ideas around that, or from the data that we ourselves have collected through our own experience in life.
Mm-hmm.
In my own case, my inner experience of God is so much different from what I was told about God in the church that I attended, in the school that I attended, and so forth, that at one point in my life I had to make a decision to choose one or the other, either my inner experience or the information I was receiving from the outer world.
Yeah.
I ultimately chose my inner experience, but how I began to expand that experience, expand the experience itself, and come to a deeper awareness of what it means to live that experience was by sharing it with others. That's why I write my books. That's why I do my lectures. That's why I give retreats and workshops. That's why I'm on radio programs such as this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's wonderful. We're almost at the end of the hour.
Yes, we are. I'm on the way. My next appointment.
Is there anything you'd like to share with us before we sign off? And also, I want to make sure that you mention your website again so people can, take advantage of the resources there.
Well, I think what I would share is I hope that they'll give a chance to this latest book because I think it's one of the most practical spiritual books that I've ever written and that might be, in fact, out there right now on the shelves. The book is called Happier Than God. It offers 17 steps to becoming happier than God, and it's a marvelous, marvelous opportunity for us to explore more deeply our relationship with the divine and our relationship with all of life. And if people want to know more about that, they can go to my website at ndwhome.com. NDW, of course, for Neil Donald Walsh, ndwhome.com. And I thank you very much for having me on the show tonight. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's been a wonderful experience, and best of luck with continuing. You don't need luck. You're on a roll.
thank you so much
for being with us and sharing your experiences.
Thank you.
All right, and good night, everybody. Good night, Neil.
Bye.
Bye.